am Femi Okay. On today's episode of The Stream, we are going to be looking at Sudan's challenging transition from a revolution to democracy. Let me remind you that back in April 2019, there was a huge uprising. The military, government and the civilians decided that they would work together for a period of transition period that would go all the way up to 2023 for democratic elections. Last October, there was a military coup. Prime Minister Abdalla Hamdok was toppled, reinstated, and then back in January, he resigned. Meanwhile, protesters continue to ask for democracy to happen, for the transition process to get back on track. This is what Tigray told us earlier.
Security forces are using an appropriate amount of forces, easily contradicted by the sheer numbers that we're seeing of killed and injured peaceful protesters and attacks on medical facilities and media offices. This is not an appropriate amount. We've seen them protect protests that were called for by the former regime with no injuries recorded, no tear gas, even as they were camped right outside the presidential palace.
What is the state of Sudan's transition to democracy? We've invited back three guests who know a lot about Sudan and the situation there. Nisreen, Muzan, Hulud, good to have you. Nisreen, please tell our audience who you are and what you do.
Hi, it's Nisreen Al-Saim. I'm a Sudanese activist. I went into my first demonstration against the previous regime back in 2012. And we are back into that square, unfortunately, right now after the military coup. I'm a generally environmental and climate activist, and I work as advisor for the Secretary General.
All right. Thanks for joining us, Nisreen. Muzan, welcome back to the stream. Remind our audience who you are and what you do.
Hello. Thank you for having me again, Femi. I'm Muzan Al-Neel. I am a fellow at Tahrir Institute for Middle East Policy. I am one of many Sudanese protesters in the streets nowadays and for a very long time by now.
All right. Good to have you. Hulud, please greet the stream audience. Good to see you again.
Thank you. Hi, everyone. I am Hulud Khair, and I'm a political commentator and the managing director of a think tank in Khartoum, Inside Strategy Partners.
We also invited the military to be part of this conversation. They didn't respond to any of our requests, but we are live on YouTube and the comments section is there for you. Put your comments, your questions in the comment section and we will put part of those to our audience and also share them with our panel as well. So the protests have continued, marches, rallies against the military for week after week after week. I see you nodding, Muzan. Can you explain what the strategy is as an activist going out on the streets, facing violence, but still continuing to do it?
Well, yeah, exactly as you explained it. Scheduled and announced protests have been going on since the coup on October 25th. They're organized and called for by the resistance committees. And despite the escalating violence that were some examples of it was mentioned by Tagrid and by Nisreen as well. Killing the state forces have killed over 63 protesters by now over the past 2 months. There are internet and calls shut down, closure of streets, of bridges. The bridges are closed on every protest day by shipping containers piled over each other at the entrance of every bridge in Khartoum. But the protests keep going on. That includes the upcoming protest on the 12th, the 17th, the 24th, and the 30th of this month. There are also the ongoing strikes and a variation of acts of protest and civil disobedience in reject of the policies of the coup government and in reject of the coup itself. And basically, those protests and acts of disobedience have managed to successfully stop the coup from stabilizing the country under its rule or giving any you know, are being able to show in any way to fake any sense of stability or any sense of acceptance by the Sudanese people. We are also seeing a protest against the policies of the coup itself. As I told you, at two main points right now, the main road between Sudan and Egypt is closed by farmers and villagers, protesting a 500% increase in electricity prices that was announced last week. Which renders their farms a total loss and pushes them into poverty. So what we're seeing right now is that the Sudanese people are rejecting the military rule, first for its violence, and second for the policies of deprioritizing people and prioritizing investments or so on. And since these are the reasons of the ongoing protest, we can tell now that the Sudanese people will not stop protesting until this is changed, until the military is out, and until there's a government that prioritizes the well-being of the people over anything else.
So on one side, you have the people. On the other side, you have the military. Am I missing any nuances, Nisreen?
Yeah, well, actually, Muzin just mentioned that there's a 500% increase in the electricity. And here I am in the car because we have a blackout right now in my town. Actually, there is a huge now there is only two sides, which is the military and everyone who's supporting the military and the street. All of the government workers they don't know what to do. There is a lot of decisions by Burhan, who's the current head of the Sovereign Council, and he dismissed many civil workers and also returned many civil workers who were actually part of the previous regime. So now the view from the government perspective, from the civil workers, is very vague. They don't know actually what to do. And for a very funny note and very funny fact, today, two of the very corrupted people, they were assistant for al-Bashir, they got cleared from all of the charges against them after disappearing of 449 documents from the court. So everything is actually going backward, let me say, and they are trying to reverse everything that we worked on, not only in this past 2 years of the transitional period, but also during the demonstration. So it's very clear. Now we have military people and people supporting them, and we have the people in the street and the rest of the Sudanese people. And now the UN have this initiative to have all of the people discussing together. Mm-hmm. And actually, these discussions are between five people who represent the military and the rest of the Sudanese people. So we will never be in the same balance. It will never be balancing. You can't have five people to balance the whole population of Sudan. And this is the current situation.
I want to bring in the Swedish ambassador to Sudan. Hulud, I'm going to play this clip and then I want you to react to it and tell us the reality of if you go out to a demonstration, what your fate may well be. The ambassador was commenting on a situation where the military not only were violent against protesters, they followed them into hospital and then beat them up even more there. Here's the ambassador for Sweden to Sudan.
And I must say I'm very disturbed of listening to these stories about firing of tear gas rockets into emergency wards, the doctors and the nurses not being able to see anything. They have to transport their patients outdoor to be able to treat them and not suffocate. So this is a blatant breach on basic human rights.
So that was actually the Norwegian ambassador, Theresa Loken.
Yeah, thank you.
And she, I think, is witnessing what we've all sort of seen for a long time now, which is that, you know, the coup was a watershed moment. I think any sort of idea that we could return to a pre-coup status quo is sort of gone. That transition is effectively over. So we are being sort of hamstrung by this insistence by many in the international community that of this idea of a return. In fact, we should be looking forward. Sudanese pro-democracy protesters want to move forward. And I think already we're seeing this tension between what the international community is pushing for and what the resistance committees and other pro-democracy groups are pushing for. And I think unless that is reconciled, meaning unless the international community gets on board with what pro-democracy groups want, this whole process will be dead in the water as it's even starting. What's interesting about what the Norwegian ambassador has witnessed and said is that she is sort of the only one who seems to be trying to pinpoint the key areas where, you know, the military is showing signs of increased repression, is showing that it's playing by the Bashir playbook. I would like to see the, you know, other members of the international community follow that lead. But so far, we're seeing a lot of sort of paralysis linked to a lack of imagination, I think, from the international community about what Sudan could look like going forward. That needs to change.
If I can jump here, I don't think it's only a lack of imagination. I think it's a lack of faith. I remember after the step down of al-Bashir, or after the coup, or after whatever we can call it, on the 12th of April, we had a meeting with the previous British ambassador, and he told us that this is an unexpected win. So for me, it's not a lack of imagination. It's a lack of trust of Sudanese people. It's a lack of vision, and unfortunately also a lack of interest. And by lack of interest, I mean that every country around Sudan and even away from Sudan have a certain interest in Sudan, either the gold, either the cotton, or the rest of the crops, or the agricultural land and everything. So every country is now more worried about their own interests within Sudan than the interests of the Sudanese people. And I think this is our main problem. The Troika had a very long statement, and for me it was a very weak statement, because if you are not actually saying that the military are killing their own people, then the statement doesn't mean anything, because this is the fact. In the line, I say at least 62 anti-military protests were being killed. These 62 are not just numbers. These are people who have families. And unfortunately, almost half of this number are kids under the age of 18. And today, the 11th, we had a big demonstration held by the mothers of not only the mortals, but also the mothers of the expected mortals, because every time we go outside to the street and demonstrate, it's not protest anymore. This is a civil resistance against the military forces that is not the people military forces anymore. This is different military forces by different people who have different interests, and all of their interests doesn't include Sudan or Sudanese people.
All right. So meanwhile, there
is
a...
I would like to add something to what Nesrine said.
Sure.
And
Thank you, Femi.
Yeah. And actually, just going back to the initiative by the UN that Nesrine mentioned earlier. Now, this initiative, there's so much wrong with it that it's almost comical. First of all, it presents equal treatment for the protesters presented in resistance committees and the criminal military who are killing them in the streets. Second, it attempts to create some kind of a way around the clear slogan of non-negotiation, no partnership, and no legitimacy by some kind of word games and ridiculous phrasing that says it's not negotiation if they're not in the same room. But basically trying to blur the fact that by participating in the process that treats the military criminals equally, it's basically legitimizing them and legitimizing their coup and their ruling in Sudan. Third, to assume that there's any kind of a common ground between the people and their killers is an attempt, again, to blur the reality of the struggle of Sudan.
Right,
for the people to have any chance. Yeah.
Muzan, I've got an idea here for you. Let's take my notes off the TV. You thought I did that without any notes. That's not possible. All right, so Volker Purvis is the UN Special Representative to Sudan, and he is aware of your very strict demands. This is what he said on January the 10th.
Resistance committees have said, which is not new, that they reject sitting with the military at one table. But we are not inviting them to sit with the military. We are inviting them to sit with us. We know that they will interact with this initiative. Some of them said that if it is just some consultations with the United Nations, there is no problem with that. We know that there is the big slogan of the three no's. No negotiations, no partnership, no bargaining.
All right, Muzan, no negotiations, no partnerships, no bargaining. How on earth are you going to get through to a transition if you refuse to do any of that? How do you get to a democratic election in 2023? No, no, no.
Actually, the question is, how on earth can we get into a decent life by compromising with our killers? There is no way. That's why people do not compromise with killers and do not compromise with terrorists. Volker is clearly going beyond his official mandates to try to gaslight one side of the struggle in Sudan, try to gaslight the Sudanese people for the benefit of legitimizing the other side, which is the military. Now, if you search his name, if you search Volker's name in Arabic on social media now, the first result you'll get is a photoshopped photo of his face on a military uniform, because that's how he's seen by protesters and by the general public in Sudan, as part of the military rule, as a facilitator of the military rule. A few minutes ago, I actually read this post that describes the current international community policy towards Sudan as no different from the appeasement diplomacy of the governments of superpowers that adopted it in dealing with Nazi Germany and fascism in Italy. Hello?
Yeah, we still hear you. You froze for a moment there. All right, so no compromise. So, no compromise.
If I may finish this sentence.
Yeah, go ahead.
Yes. What they're doing is no different from the appeasement diplomacy, literally, that they used with Nazi Germany and fascism in Italy. This is a diplomacy that they use to appease criminals, to avoid conflict, and deprioritize the lives of nations that were victims of these criminals. This is what's happening right now in Sudan. They're deprioritizing our lives for some kind of fake stability. This is an approach that history showed it's wrong, it will fail, it's unethical, and it's condemned by the entire world by now. We need to remember also that previously, Volker and UNITAMS have invited the resistance committees for meetings, to which the resistance committees just asked that the meetings should be live broadcasted. Well, and they refused. That clearly tells us that resistance committees are showing a commitment to transparency and inclusion of the public, while the UN in Sudan is showing a shameless commitment to closed-room diplomacies. This can only be explained as an attempt to co-opt and corrupt and divide and conquer the resistance. Basically, Volker and the UN are being facilitators for the military rule in Sudan, not facilitators for any kind of dialogue.
So earlier, let me just bring in a thought for you, Nusreena, and bounce off this thought, and then you can pick up off the back of it. Ahmed El Ghali is a lawyer, and he is very clear that there should be consequences for the military action. They have to be accountable. This is what he told us earlier. Have a listen and then respond.
Millions of Sudanese have been marching for the last 3 months, demanding freedom, justice, and peace, and more importantly, demanding that the military once and for all exit political life. In return, their peaceful demands have been met with brutal oppression, with murder. Over 63 people have been killed, with rape and sexual violence. The international community so far has responded with mere rhetoric. They must realize that the people of Sudan are not going to go back, and that Sudan is ungovernable for the military junta. Therefore, individual sanctions need to be imposed on the coup leaders. The international community must explicitly demand that they step aside and must facilitate dialogue among the pro-democracy movement to elect an alternative leadership for Sudan.
I was just going to go to Nusreen, and that's Nusreen, we lost your video there for a moment, but pick up, please go ahead.
Yes. Well, I just wanted to give a small history on the three no's. Well, now the Sudanese people and the street and the young people especially feel so naive. We believed before that we can have an actual negotiation with the military and then have a stable government. And the same an institutional document, an institutional agreement that we had was actually negotiated by the military. We both agreed on the same things. FFC did their part, the military did their part. As people, we were not satisfied with the institutional agreement, we said, okay, we can accept this for now because we thought that it will be a transitional period to the next step. What happened in the 25th of October is actually breaking all of this trust, breaking all of this negotiation. So why we should try again the same things we tried before? Mm-hmm. For me, actually, as Muslim mentioned, it's not different from Hitler. It's not different from Musavi. It's not different from anyone. We really need right now to... be very clear that it's either a civil government without a military interference or there is no government. Because, unfortunately, we don't have a governance structure. We don't have accountability structure. And with guns, it doesn't make it any easier.
All right, Khaloud, we have lots of questions on YouTube. I want you to ask them and answer them speedily, because each of these questions could take a whole show. So I'm going to go to Cole's question. Cole says that compromise is the key to democracy or no side will be happy. Khaloud.
I mean, you know, ideally or in a sort of vacuum, that might be true. But Sudan has very recent experience where that hasn't actually panned out. I mean, Muslims are 100% right. The fact that pro-democracy groups are being pushed to recreate the exact same conditions which led us to where we are doesn't actually make much sense. On top of that, the generals are very adept at using these kinds of processes to their own gain, something they learned very well from Bashir. Mm-hmm.
Very specific question here from SA asking, how is the government, current ruling junta, restricting civilians' ability to express their needs or disagree with the current state of the country? I felt like we've made that quite obvious during this programme, but be specific, Khaloud, so that SA understands exactly what's happening.
The short answer is in every way possible. I mean, physical restrictions, as Muslim said, closing the bridge, using shipping containers to make sure that people don't cross from one side of the city into the other, cutting off communication lines, cutting off internet lines so that people are unable to mobilize. These have all proved ineffective because protesters have only doubled down on their resolve to continue protesting. So all of these things are really for naught, but they do show that the regime has no problem continuing the repressing tactics. And, you know, where there is criticism from the international community, it's very easy for them to evade that because, as Ahmed Ajayi said in your video, there are simply no consequences for them.
Guess I'm going to bring in one more voice, and this is the voice of Hamid, who is thinking about the vacancy that is currently available for the Prime Minister of Sudan. It's really interesting that we haven't mentioned the Prime Minister for the whole 20 minutes of this show until the very end, which probably says how important that role is. I don't want to spoil the surprise for what Hamid has to say. So here he is.
Although Prime Minister Hamdok was an instrumental figure and played important roles during the transition, he had no constituency or leverage of his own, so he became much less relevant the moment he lost the trust of resistance committees and key political parties and figures. Who replaces the Prime Minister is not a very important question, in my opinion. What's really crucial is the process that would lead to a new Prime Minister and a new cabinet. This process must be inclusive and transparent and must be civilian-led and civilian-oriented and should have the demands of the people at heart.
Khaloud, you get us started off. I just want your brief responses to, so this position that is available, how do the people of Sudan influence who gets that next job?
Well, I mean, I think the obvious answer is that the people of Sudan haven't been able to influence that so far. And there doesn't seem to be any sort of pathway for them to do under the current circumstances. What is quite clear is that Sudanese politics now, as the way it is led through the street-level pro-democracy movement, is not concerned with a singular titular figure in a prime minister, so much so that we have avoided the, sort of talking about that position for the whole of this episode.
Yeah,
and so, you know, the movement goes beyond that. The movement goes beyond individual leaders, and it's much more broad-based than that. And it's about time that any sort of political, you know, programs or policy that on Sudan reflects exactly that trend.
There's a thought here that I wanted to share with you, and I'm just going to ask you very briefly, Muzan and Nizreen, to answer the question that we asked on this show, which is Sudan's transition to democracy doomed? I don't like that question. I don't like it because it means there's no hope. But what's the reality? Muzan.
If I may start, the Sudan's transition to democracy, the way that the international community wanted to do it, is clearly not going to work. But regardless of their dialogues or their initiatives. But on the other side, the dialogues that the people of Sudan are interested in are the ongoing dialogues between resistance committees that are phrasing their individual and joint political declarations and roadmaps, discussing how the resistance will take over power, what kind of a state and government they want to create. And this is what matters, and this is what is really relevant. And you can see from the smiles on our faces a few minutes ago that the irrelevancy of a singular position of the prime minister is something that we're glad we're finally getting there and moving towards building a whole country,
Let me give Nazreen not the last word, but the last sentence, Nazreen, because we're almost at the end of the show. Go ahead.
Yeah, I will finish by a quotation from one of the statements by the Resistance Committee of Al-Safia. They said, it's our destiny as generation to end the series of coups and we will not delay this fight.
Okay, and I'm going to leave it there, Nazreen.
Summarize everything.
Nazreen, Muzan, Hulud, thank you so much for helping us understand that rocky transition to democracy from revolution in Sudan. Thanks for watching. I'll see you next time. Take care, everybody.